Hello, I'm Joseph Willis. I'm a medical student at UAB School of Medicine. I'll be serving as the Wired podcast producer for this year. In this episode, we have Dr. Alexa Levy join us. Dr. Levy is an interventional radiologist in Houston, Texas. During this episode, we discuss Dr. Levy's decision to pursue medicine, her switch from surgery to radiology during her fourth year of medical school, how her and her husband managed their work-life balance as a two-physician household, her thoughts on women and minorities in the medical field, and her advice to women considering radiology, among many other things. I'd also like to take this opportunity on behalf of the Wired Interest Group at UAB to thank Dr. Levy for her time and thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope that you enjoy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tarushi Tanai, and I'd like to welcome you to the Wired podcast. I'm here today with Dr. Alexa Levy. Is it
Alexa?
I said it correct. I was like, you looked at me like it was Alex, and I was like, oh, no.
No, Alexa, well, like the Amazon, but older and much cooler.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. How are you today, Dr. Levy?
I am fantastic. How are you?
Great. I am super interested in interviewing you because I took a look at your credentials and I noticed that you went to Emory, and I also graduated from Emory, and I'm also from Houston. So
I'm
happy to be doing your interview today.
We'll have a lot to talk about and a lot in common then, both excellent cities.
Yes, of course. Do you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up, what you did in undergrad, what you majored in, where you attended medical school, that kind of stuff?
Okay. I'm 35 years old, so a little bit about what my life is a lot. So I will try to give you guys the Reader's Digest version. I was born and raised in Houston, Texas, grew up in the Woodlands, and my family moved into the actual city of Houston proper when I was in college. When I was in college, I was a psychology major, got a BA, and then took all of those wonderful prelim classes, and then basically had enough classes to probably have had a double major. And then after college, I took the MCAT, and we just didn't quite get along so much that I took it three times and had questioned whether or not I should be a doctor. If I can't pass the MCAT, then that's kind of a problem. And I was passing it, just not getting a great score. So I took some time to work in my parents' company. They were in the oil field and worked there for a little while, decided that really was not a great setting for me, and still continued to shadow and realize that medicine's really what I want. So I took a job, worked in a lab for 2 years with animals and did cell cultures and mass spectrometry, and retook the MCAT, applied, got into medical school, UT San Antonio. And it was fantastic experience, very close environment, wonderful family kind of setting. And I loved everything. I loved everything I did. I just loved being able to help patients, seeing them smile when you made an impact. And I thought that every subject was very interesting, including pathology. I was actually a pathology TA. In medical school, I actually thought that I was going to be a cardiothoracic surgeon.
And oh, wow.
It's very different from what I'm doing now in some ways. And I settled on that. Initially, I went into medical school wanting to do surgeon. I love cancer patients. I love the continuity of care. And I love the thought of cutting something out of them. And I went to cardiothoracic surgery because I realized in medicine, there's a huge problem with teams communicating with each other. And they can try and do their best, but often things get missed and it would affect patient care. Mm-hmm. Not on CT surgery, because you manage everything from their diabetes to their hypertension to their surgery. And that was eye-opening for me, that finally there was a profession where nothing could get lost. So I actually applied to CT surgery, and luckily I did well in medical school, and we'll leave it at that. I was AOA and really had a good time, you know, did a lot of volunteer work. In one big trip to Guatemala, I did a 5-week immersion program in Argentina to learn Spanish because I wanted to teach my patient, be able to speak to my patients, and just a lot of volunteer work in general. And so I applied to cardiothoracic surgery. My husband at the time was 2 years ahead of me and was a surgical intern in Charleston, and he's a urologist. And when I did my audition rotation in Charleston, I realized as a med student, I was getting up before him and getting home after him. And he was already a surgery intern. And so after I did my audition rotation and it went really well, I rotated on radiology, because what surgeon doesn't read their own films? And one particular attending, and I hope at some point he gets to hear this, Dr. Serrani was at Charleston. He was a chest imager. And he was just this loud, boisterous, outgoing guy with an amazing personality. And I was like, wow, like what you do is cool. And all radiologists aren't weird and quiet and sit in rooms. I really had no exposure to radiology whatsoever in medical school. We had a couple of clinical correlations, but that's it. So I had never even considered radiology because I thought they were all just a bunch of weirdos that sat in a dark room. So after that experience, I made a knee-jerk reaction. And in October of my MS4 year, I changed my application to radiology.
Wow.
Yeah. So quite the change, and didn't match because it was kind of last minute, and scrambled into a position at Emory, which was pretty incredible. And then had a prelim surgical year at Baylor. And then I trained there, decided that I really missed patient care, did a fellowship in interventional radiology, and then came back to my hometown of Houston, where I have a lot of family and friends with my one son at the time. And now I have my son's 3 and a half. I have a 14-month-old daughter.
Oh, wow.
And we're here and doing great. That's my life in a nutshell.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. I was just wondering, what's the part of your job that you love the most? What do you look forward to the most when you wake up each morning?
Patient care, seeing their faces and smiles. I mean, even as simple as a paracentesis. I have one patient who I've been doing a paracentesis on since I was pregnant with my daughter. And every time I see him, he goes, mommy, mommy, hey, mommy, how's the baby? Any pictures, photos? And that interaction is so cool and so endearing. So whenever I go to work, having those interactions, I look forward to being able to teach is amazing, and seeing light bulbs go off from my residents and fellows when I learn something new. And when I go to clinic, I have a particular interest in chronic pain and do chronic pain interventions, and seeing those patients, following up with them, seeing how they're doing long term is something I really look forward to.
That's awesome. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on the gender gap in radiology, like how you navigated that. I know you said that your decision to go in was a last minute one and that you ended up having to scramble. Did you find that when you were reapplying and trying to get back into radiology, that was an issue that may have like influenced your decision at all to go back in?
Gender gap is a huge problem. Only 20% of radiologists are women. And even less of that, I'm sure, are interventional radiologists. And I can say that because in my 16 class residency, I was the only female.
Mm-hmm.
In my 8 class of fellows, I was the only female. In a faculty of 8, I'm the only female.
Right.
I would say that initially, and I didn't know anything about radiology, which is why I didn't apply. But I think that there is this misconception that people just sit in a dark room all day and there may not be very social. And I think, as women in general, we have this need to take care of people, need to see people, need to see expressions. And then at least for me, the thought of just sitting in a dark room and not getting that patient smile, that gratification, was not something that was very appealing to me at the time. Now, I know there's been a lot more of a push to increase the diversity, gender, as well as ethnic diversity within radiology. When I was at Emory, I was a part of diversity inclusion group, and I hosted 2 women's symposiums, which really helped a lot and kind of debug some myths.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that answers your question.
Yes, absolutely. And on this journey to radiology, did you ever have like moments of self-doubt? Did you ever like question like whether radiology was right for you, and how did you kind of overcome those doubts?
Great question. So I actually did a surgical intern year on purpose because I wanted to make sure that I was really making the right decision. And I did it at the program that I had initially thought I was going to rank number one over an integrated program. And I realized that was not the right balance for me, that even though I enjoyed it, but there was so much more I needed in life. And I think that's something in medical school that people don't harp on enough. You may love doing something, but can you do it and have the life that you want on the outside? My boyfriend at the time, and now my husband, we were apart for 6 years during my training. And so I never saw him. So I was happy as a clam, working all the time and seeing people and seeing my friends. And it was great. But then when reality struck and I rotated with him, I realized that, man, I don't want to end up divorced because I never leave the hospital. I don't want to end up not going to my kids' soccer games, band, break dancing, whatever they end up doing. And so even though there were some moments in radiology, I'd made such a big switch that I, you know, thought, am I going to be able to set a computer? I always knew that there was IR. I always knew there was MAMO, and I always knew there'd be a thing, some way I could end up doing procedures and get that patient interaction I needed. And I knew no matter what, my work-life balance was going to be much better. And it's super interesting and super cool. Radiologists are the doctor's doctors, and the amount that you have to know is an incredible amount of knowledge, and they are some of the most intelligent people in the hospital, and it's problem solving. It's really cool. So
I'm curious to know how you kind of navigated the work-life balance aspect of it. You mentioned being apart from your husband for 6 years. How did you keep up with that relationship and nurture your relationship with your husband while still trying to kind of maintain, you know, your professionalism at work and trying to advance your career?
Okay. So I guess we'll go back with that with med school. So 6 years apart total. He's a urologist now. And obviously I'm an interventionalist. When we were in med school, I mean, we both were in med school. So we just understood. We saw each other every 2 weeks. You know, when I was a surgical intern at Baylor, it went to every 6 weeks, and I would just work straight to get that golden weekend so I could see him. FaceTime was around, so we did a lot of FaceTime. And when we were together, we really just focused on each other and didn't really sweat a lot of small things. We developed incredible communication because you had to when you're apart, and you really learn what's important.
Yeah.
I will say the work-life balance when I was a fellow and he was an attending, and I had a 3-month-old baby when I started my fellowship, which there's never a good time to have a baby, but to have a 3-month-old and start an interventional radiology fellowship was tough. Initially, I would go 3 days without seeing my son sometimes, and that was really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I just had to talk with the rest of my fellows, and they became very supportive and made sure that no matter what, at least every other day, I made it home for bedtime to spend time with my son.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it's hard to ask about because I feel like when we discuss conversations of work-life balance, we're always asking, you know, the woman, how did you balance it? So I'm also curious to know like what your husband kind of did on his end that was like unique to his process in the relationship.
Absolutely. Good question. And it is funny. I mean, as women, we are often the caretaker of the family, of the house, of children, everything. And that's just a role. And I think that role doesn't really change no matter what profession you're in. You're always going to have a little bit of a stronger draw.
Yeah.
What I will say is in terms of making things work, we both traveled equal amounts to see each other. Mm-hmm. When I had 2 years left in my residency and my husband had finished his residency in urology, he decided he wanted to do a fellowship initially, but he decided, no, I need to be with my wife. And so he took a job in Atlanta so that we could finally be together.
That's awesome.
And decided I'm going to wait on that. And then I decided to stay and do my fellowship in Atlanta because he had a great job.
Right.
Houston, we decided on a city together. We both had a lot of family in Texas. We both have a lot of friends here. It was a joint decision to come back here. And then when it comes to childcare and that kind of story, I mean, he even says this, the draw I feel and the guilt that I feel when I'm not at home and missing my kids, he just doesn't feel that. And I've talked to some of my male partners and they say the same thing. They know it's there, but they don't understand it. And what he does is he just tries to support me whenever he can. You know, we make sure that when major holidays, we line up our calls, you know, or only one of us is on call at any one time so we can take care of our kids. And we support each other, even if we have work dinners, going out, watching the kids and making sure, hey, you need some time with your friends. Hey, I need some time with my girlfriends, making sure that we can cover for each other and take care of the kids so that the other one can take care of themselves.
Gotcha. So just mutual communication, working together and meeting each other's needs.
That is everything. And realizing that everybody's needs are a little different,
right.
But everybody needs self-care.
Yes, absolutely.
To make sure that you make that a priority in your life and in your spouse's life.
Yes. I am very curious to know if there were any women that inspired you along the way, whether that be like co-residents or, your superiors, faculty, administrators, anyone that, you could have interacted with, even an interprofessional interaction that really helped you decide what kind of leader you want to be in your field and the kind of physician you want to be.
I think to be a leader and to work hard, I actually was inspired by my grandmother. She was an amazing woman and during World War II worked for a bank and raised three kids. And my grandfather worked for customs. And the fact that she did all that in that time is pretty incredible. And she had always been such a hard worker and driven. And so I knew that that's something I wanted to do. My mother worked full time, is a petroleum engineer. And raised us and got us to everything. And that was always pretty amazing that she worked full-time, and I worked full-time. I never felt like I missed anything. I was very loved. And then when I got into medicine, I have a lot of people I guess I would consider mentors. But as far as awe-inspiring, I think I was just pretty driven, like knew I wanted to go into medicine, knew I wanted to take care of people, knew I wanted to work hard. And knew I wanted to be the best version of what I wanted to be.
Right.
I think I knew early on that I didn't want to be a Denton Cooley. You know, I didn't want to be known for what I did, but I want every patient to feel like they are being taken care of by a family member.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting how different physicians kind of come up with their own method of practice. And that's not just in terms of like, you know, how they implement medicine, but like how they carry themselves and like those interpersonal interactions with their colleagues and their patients. That's so important. So it's interesting to hear that, you know, you've always kind of known what your values are and tried to implement them as best as possible. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Never let somebody put you in a box for what they think you should be. This right. is a long journey. You lose a lot of your, you know, 20s doing it. You give up a lot of things to do this and to take care of people for the rest of your life. So make the career what you want it. And if you're not sure yet, that's okay. But don't let anybody put you in a box.
Nice. Yes. I will take that with me and just remember that forever. Thank you. Okay. So what do you feel that you've done to kind of open up the field of radiology to more women? And like, what advice could you give me or some of my other peers who are interested in radiology?
Absolutely. So just in general, they're not all a bunch of weirdos that sit in a dark room. I promise. They get to work at a normal hour. They drink coffee and do their work. And they're the doctor's doctor. And they're some of the smartest people in the hospital. I didn't know any of this in medical school. So it's definitely something that everybody should look into. Radiology, I look at it as the gateway, almost like internal medicines, the gateway to all these subspecialties. Within radiology, you know, you can do mammography and do procedures. You can do MSK and do that kind of procedure or focus on that kind of health. You can do interventional radiology, do mostly procedures. You can do private practice and do a hybrid. You can do body imaging, MRI, and focus on that. There's a lot of different areas that you can do with an interventional radiology and work-life balance. Let me say that again, work-life balance. It's nice being a consultant and as an interventionalist. I care a lot about my patients. And if I wasn't just a consultant, I would definitely be the physician who would have a hard time leaving the hospital because I'd always be worried about them. But since I'm not primary, I can leave the hospital knowing that my patient's being well taken care of. I do my procedure. I see them in clinic. I have some follow-up, but then I get to leave. My day ends. And other things. Right. For me, what have I done is I've done two women's symposiums at Emory. One of them, I had a panel of women who are a little higher up and on boards of things and how women are interpret, have them talk about how women are, their actions are interpreted and how men may be looked at as, you know, working very hard, but the female is aggressive and has all these different turns, and kind of how you navigate through that and how you navigate that through that in radiology. And then as an attending now, I just talk a lot. I say, you want to talk about pregnancy, what that was like? You want to talk about what breastfeeding is like as an attending and working here? You want to talk about work-life balance, having kids? Can you do it? What's that like? I talked to all the visiting medical students about it. In fact, I went up to them and said, do you have any questions for me? I said, I don't know. I said, do you want to know what it was like to have two kids? And they go, oh, because it's so taboo to talk about it. And that's terrible. It shouldn't be taboo. You should be able to ask these questions all the time. And so I try to be extremely transparent with anybody and just bring it up and talk about it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And what would you say your day-to-day looks like? I guess it's different from day-to-day because some days you're doing procedures and some days you're doing clinic, but I guess like on your best day, what would your work day look like?
Oh, if I could design that, I often can't, so I'm not even going to go there. But on average, I would say I leave the house around 6:45, 7. We start rounds at 7:30, and then we're doing procedures and consults and all that until about 5:30. So on average, I'll get home 5:36, I would say. Some days a little earlier, you know, my practice, my group, we like to look out for each other and make sure that we have good work-life balance. And so if somebody needs to go take care of their kid, take them to an appointment, we will cover them, or we'll let somebody else go home early if things look like they're slowing down. And then we also have clinic built in, and clinic is just half a day. So you can take the afternoon to kind of manage your life, which has been very, very helpful.
And do you do any, do you have any diagnostic radiology days, or do you solely do IR?
I am 95% interventional radiology. I do read CTAs, and of course they're full body CTAs because that's the magic eight ball for the hospital now. It's the new physical exam is let's just image everybody. So they are complex endograft leaks and cancer workups. And so I still read those, but only when I'm assigned, and it's only about once a week.
Right. And forgive my ignorance in asking this question, but within IR, are you subspecialized any further? Do you focus on a specific part of the body, or do you kind of just do whatever they assign you to?
And there are no ignorant questions, by the way, because this is posted. This is what IR does. You know, it's, you have to ask. So please, this excellent question. We're starting to subspecialize some because there's so much that we do. Ports, G-tubes, interventional oncology, which includes cryoablations, Y90, interventional pain, venous reconstruction, peripheral arterial disease. A third of that is still done by interventional radiologists. It is a lot to have to know about and keep up with the literature. So as you kind of grow and move in your career, you usually try to, I guess you kind of narrow down into what you like to do. My personal interests are interventional oncology. I love cancer patients. I think in the most ideal world, we'd have a clinic. I would put in that patient's port. I would do their Y90s, their ablations if they needed. I would put in their G-tube if I needed to. And I would just be their interventionalist, period. But I love the follow-up with them. I have a particular interest in interventional pain and cryoneurolysis. I actually have quite the population of complex regional pain syndrome patients, which I help treat by collaborating with PM&R, anesthesia pain, and neurology, which has been really, really, really cool. And that's what I'm most passionate about overall, I would say, is just the collaboration with other physicians and showing that we can play in the same sandbox and offer different things that overall really make a huge impact on the patient's overall care.
Yeah. Speaking of collaboration, I noticed that you did some work in including radiologists on the wards and like including radiologists in the rounding process. Could you speak a little bit more about that and why that's important to you and kind of the consequences, like both positive and negative of that kind of inclusion?
I can even talk to you about it from the point of being a radiology resident rotating in the ICU as part of my interventional exposure. It's huge because ultimately, while surgeons and other specialties say they can look at CT scans, MRIs, and all those things, it's a five-year residency. It's really hard to pick up on nuances and everything else and kind of put it all together. So having somebody who can look at the imaging and say, hey, is this going on? Maybe something else is going on. this is actually more of an abscess. No, this is more of a biloma. This is why, actually changes patient management. And even as a resident, I noticed that it really affected patient management, being on rounds and being able to read things for them.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I feel like quality improvement is becoming such a huge part of healthcare, and the way different professions and different specialties kind of tie into that and make their own contributions towards quality improvement in order to like better patient management in the end is so interesting. So Joseph, were both really interested in seeing like what that looks like for a radiologist. So thank you.
No, it's very, very awesome. I mean, I say there's still a lot of people that will come into rooms and ask you your interpretation. They'll bring whole teams. You'll go through it, see if it's trainable. So that conversation still happens, maybe not on broads, but more complex patients. But particularly in patients in the ICU, post-transplant patients, it would really be wonderful to have a radiologist or at least a trainee on rounds with you.
Right. Okay. So do you have any final advice for women who are thinking about applying into radiology, who are unsure of how to make themselves, you know, standout applicants during the residency season? What would you recommend we do in order to make ourselves seem like better applicants?
As far as being attractive applicants, you're a woman. The field's only a quarter women, so that helps. I hate to say that, but that's true. I was talking to some medical students in the age of COVID. It's really terrible that you guys don't get to go do in-person interviews and actually get to pick people's brains and how they do. But I would say general advice, to make yourself more competitive at this point. I mean, hopefully you've done some research. Hopefully you have letters of rec for people who know you really well. Say you want to do interventional radiology, they should not all be interventional radiologists. When I applied to CT surgery, I had two chairs of CT surgery. I had a pediatrician write me one because he had so many wonderful things to say about me. And if you have letters of rec from different fields, it shows that you're able to work with different types of people.
Right.
So I think having a diversity of letters of recommendation is very important, other than test scores and anything else. And then expressing interest. You really like a program, reach out to them, reach out to somebody you know in the program, work any connection that you have. And when you interview, be yourself. You need to realize that there are other people competing for that spot, but they also want you. They gave you the interview. And so the program also needs to impress you and show you why you should come there.
Gotcha. I'm curious to know about research. So especially at our school, I feel like there's this total scramble to just get as many publications down as possible. I was just wondering, like, is there like a set number? Is it quality over quantity? Like, what are programs looking for in terms of research?
It's probably best asked for our program director. I can tell you that it is much more competitive now than it was when I was applying. I don't know if I would have gotten in, because for me, I was much more interested about global health and community service than publishing as a med student. I don't know if I even published anything, but I had a lot of unique experiences. I think number one, having things that are unique to talk about and that you're passionate about are important. With regards to interventional radiology or any kind of radiology, go to conferences, publish educational exhibits and things you can talk about, but in things that you're interested in. Those are low-hanging fruit that are pretty easy to get done. If there's something you're passionate about, work on that. And if you can talk a lot about it in an interview, that's great. Some of the applications I look at, there's a lot of things, but the person is not the first author. Put each other on papers. I would definitely say it's a lot more about quality than quantity. And I would also say that do in med school what you're passionate about. I think doing a little bit of research just to say that you tried it is good and having one thing. But if you like global health and that's what you're doing every summer and it's making a difference and it's something you can talk about and it's something you want to help bring and grow in a residency program, that's a whole lot to talk about in an interview and much more interesting than RNA and a mouse, I think.
Yeah. And that's really interesting that you bring up, like, especially like the example of global health. I think when we apply to residency, we feel like, you know, this is just a role for us. It's just a means to an end. You know, we're just here to train, get stuff done, leave, get a job. But it's so interesting to think that you could also grow the program and be like a valuable asset to the program and function as an integral part of your program by implementing some sort of novel program within your residency that, you know, can improve patient care, can help bolster your, you know, your institution's reputation. That's super awesome. And I also think it's awesome that you mention the diversifying your rec letters. I think that there's this misconception that, you know, you have to only, you know, if you're applying to IR, only get rec letters from interventionalists or surgeons or people who are relevant to your field. But yeah, especially in the age where we're talking about interprofessional interactions and quality improvement, that interplay between different kinds of physicians and is so important. So I really enjoyed that you like touched on that.
No, absolutely. It's really important. It's medicine is collaborative. You definitely need some things from the field, something from somebody well-known, but if there's somebody in a different department who you worked well and they want to write you a letter of recommendation and you know it's going to be good and they can talk about you, then that's what you need.
Right.
It comes down to it. Hearing from other clinicians how you work and how you perform means a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so here is the fun part. We're calling this segment the lightning round. And it's just like a series of really fun questions, kind of meant to like bust myths about radiology and also just, you know, to have fun and crack jokes. So is there a window in your main reading room or in your workspace?
Absolutely not. It's terrible. It's all enclosed and it's very bright because we're interventionalists. It's actually harder to see the screen.
And how many monitors do you use in your main setup?
Three.
What special keyboard or mouse do you use, if any?
Don't, and I need to invest one because my wrist is really starting to hurt. Where's people have cool mouses and like these whole head setups, and I'm like, you are very ergonomic, so I need to work on that.
Right. And then what's your favorite procedure in IR? Is there anything that you especially like look forward to doing every morning?
Anything involving interventional pain, cryoneurolysis.
Do you have any pets? And if so, what are their names?
I have a 19-pound cockapoo named Shelby, and she's amazing, and she's 5, and she's like a live stuffed animal, which is exactly what I wanted.
Do you have any hobbies? What do you do for fun?
Running, working out, cooking. I used to be quite the ethnic cook, making anything from bibimbap to bulgogi to lamb vindaloo from scratch. Love that. And before COVID, massive, massive hobby of traveling. Before COVID, every year had been out of the country, and I've been to about 19 or 21 countries. And
wow.
It's amazing to see what's out there, experience different cultures, and it really helps make you a more well-rounded human, and I think a better clinician for it.
Nice. If you could meet one person in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
The Dalai Lama, because I already met him once. He used to teach a graduate level.
Right. Course. He teaches a course at Emory.
Yes. Yes. And he used to teach. And I was a student when he did that. And I was walking around in Woodruff Library and he was there and he looked at me and bowed at me and back. And I still get that amazing feeling. And he gave me some red string and he gave a talk and I didn't go because I was an idiot college student who went out drinking. And so I'd like to meet him and pick his brain.
I'm actually curious, did you get to watch Jimmy Carter your freshman year at Emory? Because that was like, I remember like watching him talk, and I think it was like one of the last talks he gave before.
Yes. I did that in the gym.
Right. And then, you know, that was like a huge deal. And then of course, like Songfest, so many memories there.
Oh yeah.
Big deal. That's awesome. Oh, okay. I have a question.
X. Anyways, nobody can see my arms, but
were you in OL?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Cox or the duck?
Cox, the duck. Man, the first time I went there, and that's Emory's public cafeteria, and I got broccoli, there was a cockroach on it. The only thing that was good from Cox was the cookies, from the duck, but definitely Cox Hall.
Yeah, I think the duck was notorious for their cookies. I think It's improved a little bit because like they switch food vendors, but that's an entirely different story. And I've been to the new Duck, and it's like Emory now is like a hotel. Like I was an Oxford student, and then I went to Emory, and I just remember visiting like Atlanta campus a few years after, and it was completely changed. It was like completely unrecognizable, a complete hotel. I feel so jealous of the kids that go there now.
My gosh, especially because Cox had like Chick-fil-A and like a salad stand when I was there, and that was great. But now it's got sushi and
Yeah.
poking stations and like all this. It's amazing. They're very spoiled.
Super fancy over there at Emory. Go Eagles. What was the last book you read? And this could be regular book or an audiobook, any of the two.
I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's about a black nurse and how a child she's taking care of ends up dying, and the family tries to sue her, and a white lawyer who tries to get her out of, everything that happened and how they navigate that. And so kind of a navigation of your profession when you have a different skin color. I remember I always, this is kind of a tangent. I should remember the name of the book. I honestly read so many papers every day to keep with literature that when I get home, I like to watch reality TV. I love all the Real Housewives. I love Southern Charm, and I just like to fry my brain. So that's a tip for life. It makes me very happy. But I just, this is off topic, but I think it's a good topic. Is I would get so upset because a lot of people would see me walking out, and they'd be like, "Oh, wow, are you a nurse?" And I'm like, "Why? Because I'm a woman? N no, I'm a physician, and I'm your doctor." But one of my colleagues and one of my chief residents, when I was a surgical intern, says, "Well, at least you don't get called a janitor." And it's black. And so I think that in this age of everything and how people get judged based off of the color of their skin and everything else, that's obviously a huge topic and something for later. But
Right.
something I think that a lot of us take for granted that we don't get judged in certain ways.
Yeah. And like you said before, like exposure to different cultures, cultural competency, that's so important because then obviously you're not just an advocate for your patients, but you sometimes have to end up being an advocate for your colleagues and, step in when those strange, problematic interactions happen.
That's
Because,
so ridiculous and so necessary, but it happens. So,
Yeah, for
right.
sure.
Interrupting the lightning round for that, serious, but
No, that was important. I think everyone needs to hear something like that. Okay, so you mentioned reality TV show. Are you a big movie watcher? What was the last movie you watched?
last movie what I watched was Street Fighter. My husband got was really into Jean-Claude Van Damme. I want to watch those movies, and I like those. And so that's what we watched.
And I'm glad you mentioned that you were a big traveler. What's your favorite vacation spot? If you're just, looking for R&R, where do you want to go?
Well, I can tell you my top two trips I've ever been on. Going to Thailand, amazing culture. Buddhism, I think it's just such a beautiful religion and very calm, and seeing all the Buddhas and all the temples and hearing the history and the food and everything was amazing. Most memorable trip was hiking Machu Picchu. Everybody needs to do that. It is glorious and beautiful and relaxing. And then as far as my favorite trip, it's very different now that I'm a mom and have two kids. And I call it a vacation because trips are now when you bring my lovely kids and they're not quite as relaxing. Vacations are just me and my husband or me and my girlfriend. And we've actually done a couple staycations. We'll just stay at a hotel and just take a night off. And so favorite place actually recently is just going to my parents' place in Colorado. They don't get very good cell reception. And I look out in the back and we see mountains and a big river. And then it's
Wow.
just very calm, quiet, and peaceful. When you're making decisions all day, it's nice to wake up and sip your coffee and hear nothing.
Cool. And do you have any final advice?
Overall advice is people say you can do it all. And you can, but you can't do it all the time. You are not going to be 100% doctor and 100% mom. That's not the way it works. You're going to feel guilty about missing something at work. You're going to feel a pull at home. You're going to feel guilty about your kids. But what you can do is you can be 100% doctor when you're at work, focused on that. And when you get home, leave everything at work make it a hard stop, make it a boundary that, no, I'm at home, I'm going to spend time with my family and be 100% wife, mom, and yourself when you're at home. So know that the balance is hard, the struggle is real, but you can do it. You just have to set boundaries and then not be hard on yourself.
And I think that is it. Thank you so much, Dr. Levy. It was a pleasure having a fellow Houstonian and a fellow Emory Eagle for our, I guess,
Rush City.
I know. but thank you so much. This was such a fun conversation, and thank you for your time.
No, my pleasure. And anybody who hears this, you know, can find my email address on the UT Houston website, and just feel free to reach out if you have any questions, anything. I'm an open book, and it's important to talk about everything and to take away the taboo of asking certain questions. You need to go into everything eyes wide open. So greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with y'all today, and hopefully I get invited back from the talk at some point.
Yes, and we will let you know when this comes out. We for sure would love to have you again, and you know, thank you so much.
No, my pleasure again. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to the Wired Podcast. I'm your host, Tarushi Tanaya, and our podcast producer is Joseph Willis. If you enjoy our content, please share and subscribe for free to the podcast. Please check the show notes for Dr. Levy for her email and the book she referenced during our interview. If you are interested in learning more about women in radiology or starting your own Wired chapter, please feel free to reach out to us on Instagram and Twitter. If you are a UAB medical student interested in shadowing prolific female radiologists, please consider joining our special topics course. Thanks, and see you next time.